fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not a chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Right smack dab in the middle of it. Right smack dab in the middle. We are right smack dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Coming up next on our program, our beginning of our second hour, we've got to take up a little slack here, and I'm going to announce it. This is a rebroadcast that Charlotte Littlefield and I did with Helen Caldicott. And this goes back to May 12th, 2012. And this was a little over a year after the Fukushima. And by that time, she had some very, very strong opinions about what went on there and about what she called, we asked about a cover-up. She said absolutely there was a cover-up. Helen Caldicott will begin a tour next month, March 2014, in about six cities across Japan, and she's going to be delivering what she believes to be the truth and the bona fide truth. She's a woman that stands very strongly against nuclear weapons and nuclear power plants. She not only heads up the Helen Caldicott Foundation or the Caldicott Foundation, but she also heads up another organization called Nuclear Beyond Nuclear, I think is the name of that organization. And she can't help but be condemnatory about the nuclear weapon systems that are out there. And sure, she links that the existing power plants were uranium-plutonium-type based systems so that they could produce material to make nuclear weapons. And she has some very, very important things to say. And Charlotte Littlefield and I had a very, 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 very important exchange with her. She was out of Australia at the time that we interviewed her. She lives right there north of Sydney, or very close, a bedroom city there, right out of Sydney, Australia. But, I mean, she's just marvelous in her presentation. This weekend tonight is March tonight is the 1st of March, okay? And, a lot of things have happened this past week. The Syrian thing is still unfolding. We've got Al-Qaeda troops in civil war with other more moderate jihadist type of organizations. The most recent thing was the Ukraine, and that all hell is breaking loose over there, and we've got Soros, George Soros, deep in that. We've got a struggle between European Union groups and the Russian Federation, Federation of Russia is pulling. We've got troops that have been activated. The Russians are not going to let go of Ukraine, that's for sure. It's too important. It's very close. It's on the outer edges of Russian Federation. They're not going to let go of it. There are pipelines running through there to Eastern and Western Europe that supplies them with a great amount of natural gas. And so there's going to be quite a struggle there, and this is not going to be something that's just going to be over and done with in just a few weeks or a few months. The Russians are there to stay. They're being threatened on their home ground, and we're going to see them stand firm and do whatever they need to take back, you could say, control, or to maintain control of. He's going to continue to gain and maintain control of the Ukraine. The Soviet Union are not fools, and Putin certainly is not a fool. We're going in there, and Obama, President Obama, is making these statements that making these threats that don't go in there and don't disturb this new government. But the Russians are right there on the border. The Ukraine has always been a very valuable asset to them. It was the breadbasket of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. So they're not going to take it very lightly just to leave and let us go in there and take over with this new regime or whatever. They have a fleet there, the Black Sea Fleet, Sevastopol, so forth, and they have thousands of soldiers and so forth right there on the threshold. So you're not going to see anything occur in that area that is not pro-Russian. We can't risk a confrontation with the Russians in that area. We would be very foolish in doing that. We're tied down there with some of our foreign policy in Syria today, and we're in confrontation with the Soviets now in Iran and Syria. We've got a quagmire. Hillary Clinton left a mess when she left as Secretary of State and stepped down and retired out of that position. I mean, just look at Libya alone. That was an unconstitutional war. It was undeclared. It was a NATO action. And it devastated Libya today. It's not better today than it was before we went in there. They've destroyed that country. And here we are sitting here. Oh, we stood up for what? We stood up for nothing over there. But violence and death and division and destruction of the environment and so forth. And the oil revenues that they had before. Gaddafi was becoming the leader of Africa. So there was a takedown there that had to ensue. And that's really what it was about. He was going off on his own. He wanted to create a dinar, you know, maybe a gold dinar and so forth. And they just wouldn't allow it. The big kingpins out here just wouldn't stand for it. And they got there, they got the surrogate army of the United States to go in there along with the NATO and made it a NATO action. Like it was a threatening NATO. No, it wasn't threatening NATO. But this is what they're doing. They're very clever and they're very ingeniously evil. And a friend of mine has done a great amount of research on psychopathic behavior. And when you begin to look at this pathocratic system, and he calls these people pathocrats, so to speak. And there's a lot of study by different people that have studied the psychopaths and their psychopathic behavior that would come behind those kinds of things. Coming up next, we will have this rebroadcast that of a program that we originally aired on May 12, 2012. The preceding hour, the first hour, was with Farrell Montgomery. He's an associate producer of our up-and-coming Fukushima Solutions World Conference that's going to be held at the University of Texas, on the University of Texas campus, in room 3.02 Painter Hall. Again, that would be in 3.02 Painter Hall, and that's on the campus of the University of Texas at Austin. We've got quite a few different personages coming in and speakers coming in. We hope that Helen Caldicott, who is on this rebroadcast tonight, will come in. But we're not, you know, being promised that. We've got a pretty bare-bones budget, so feel free to make contributions and to exercise some of the Indiegogo contributions that are on Indiegogo. Come into www.fukushimasolutions.com, and we welcome your generous contributions to help us get this done. We're going to be taking the first 4,000 of contributions to cover our expenses in this conference and so forth and broadcast, and then we're going to allocate anything over and above that to the sailors who are ill. Dr. John Apsley out of Seattle, Washington area is heading up a team to administer regenerative medicine to several of those sailors. We don't know exactly who they are because of medical confidentialities, But Dr. John Apsley, a very valiant person up there in that area, is administering regenerative medicine to these veterans. And some are in very, very poor shape. Some can't walk. There's between 70 to 100 that are joining into a lawsuit. And they evidently, the USS Ronald Reagan sailed into a very, very powerful plume of radioactivity. With all the technology that we have, it would seem like they could have easily stayed away from anything, any front or any air plume that would have contaminated the ship. The USS Ronald Reagan now is sitting in dock, is being docked in San Diego. They don't know exactly what's going to happen to that ship. Anything could happen. It may end up be just sitting there, you know, for forever. I mean, we don't really know what's going to happen because we don't know the extent of the radiation contamination of the ship. We know that they ordered everyone off of the ship and docked it in San Diego. And then we hear, you know, these stories about all these different sailors and veterans and so forth off of that ship that are incurring a lot of very deadly type of illnesses. We need to wake up. I mean, I keep hitting over and over. I know to my listening audience out there that gets an old saw, so to speak. But to awaken is to come out of that state of delusion that we find ourselves in. And it's very simple, is that if we don't forgive one another, we're going to remain in that state and be very hateful towards everyone else. And it's not hard to try to visualize and try to understand what I've been saying over these years. You've got to just try to come out of that. It's an indoctrination. It's a propaganda state. It's a conditioned state. We're computerized. We're programmed in it. And here we have, tonight or Friday night, we got Obama could pull Russian trip and Ukraine tumult, you know. I mean, you know, that's what we can't do much over there. U.S. officials said on Friday that President Barack Obama makes great plans to attend an international summit in Russia this summer and could also halt discussion on deepening trade ties. We don't go to meetings and this and that. You know, what can we do over there? We can't do a whole hell of a lot. And it's going to end up to where the Russians are going to call the shots in the area. I'm sorry, but we just can do so much. The people on the ground there, I think factions of this are very, very, very sincere about a grassroots uprising there. And I think there are some in there, some people, and there are factions in there, I think, that want to do the right thing. And that's what's going to be interesting, is that during this uprising that occurred in the last few weeks there in Kiev, you didn't have rioting on the level where it was destructive and looting going on and so forth. The people there that were part of the demonstrations, and I'm talking about the non-military or militia type that were in the involved in it. You had some very, very good people, it looked like to me, that were sitting that were part of the demonstrations and that stood their ground and stood up and wanted to be heard. I think that's very noble of some of those Ukrainians, whether they're the Russian connected or Ukrainian speakers. You know, they stood their ground. They didn't go out and pillage and vandalize and loot. That did not happen. So there's a certain element of morals and good morals and ethics and standards and principles within the population at large. It's these people that are sitting in these parliaments and stuff that are enriching themselves. And I think the Ukrainian parliament has its share of millionaires sitting in there. So how do we ever contend with the corruption? The monies have gotten and grown to be so humongous in size that we just can't deal anymore with these people that are there. I mean, they're in power. They're going to make a fortune with each other. There's munitions to buy and to equip their armies with. Helen Caldicott later on will say that the nuclear weapons are like the family jewels that men have to have, you know. And she makes a real side remark about it, but it's true that the men of the world need to awaken and come out of this war-mongering state. There is a place, and even Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, said it, there is a place to use violence, but it should be very, very limited. And one of the main situations Gandhi was saying that the use of violence is warranted is protecting your family. A man's job in his family is to take care of that family and to protect them from physical harm or intrusion or hurt or pain from the outside. That is the core warrior, you could say, mentality or programming that we should still exhibit. Over and above that, when men strike other people in bars and they get drunk, and today these drugs are so insidiously strong that it's just taking out most everyone. You know, it's just disrupting. It's addictive, alcohol, drugs, and so forth. That is causing great harm to the society at large. And if only we could stop this addictive compulsive cycle. It's very demeaning. It's lowering our aims. It's working from more of an animal sense and basis than anything else. And if we could somehow awaken, you know what I mean, from that kind of existence, and come to try to see the world in a different way, then maybe we could make a better world. Bishop Sheen used to sit up there and say, if we all lit a candle, if everyone lit a candle, what a bright world this would be. Come March 22nd, and especially the evening of the 23rd, we're going to close our conference here in Austin. And that conference is going to have a couple of primary goals. We're going to put a lot of things on the table, and we're going to come up with a conversation. We don't want it to be hurtful to anyone, but the truth is the truth, and we must try to express that the best way that we can. In doing that, we've got to place upon the table what really happened in Fukushima, and then the Japanese themselves should have moved earlier to begin a process of stopping that spewing forth of that radiation, which they did not do. Their culture and their civilization had been shut off for centuries from the outside world. So in a respect, they're more of an isolationist type of society and culture. They strongly believe in obeying authority. So they're very, very slow in objecting and going against the authority when the authority says, gives out certain orders to them. And so as a result, they're very, very good people, and they're very, very responsive to authoritarian orders and so forth. This is one time that the Japanese people, there were some protesting, and they just had to continue to pour out of the streets originally. It didn't occur on the level that it might have occurred on. But had it occurred at a higher level, there might have been a better response to doing something by the politicians to address a very strong protest movement in Japan of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Japanese into the streets. And that's actually what should have happened. But it didn't. And so what we have to do, we have to say, okay, let's forget about placing the blame. Let's go from March 22nd, March 23rd, the 2 days of our conference, forward. We're bringing in some of the leading world's experts. Some will be Skyping in from Moscow, hopefully, from Japan, from all across America. And then we'll have people on the stage with us. It will be taking place again at the University of Texas at Austin in Painter Hall, room 3.02, which is the lecture hall. It holds 216 people. So we hope to see you out there. Come on out March 22nd and 23rd. Go especially to our site, and this is where we need the most help. Go to our site, FukushimaSolutions.com, and go ahead and buy some T-shirts. David Barrow and I designed that T-shirt, the logo on there, and basically we took a Japanese war flag, a military flag, and we took out the solid sun, and then we put in there a radiation symbol in red and white. And this is not to hurt the Japanese or anything, but this is a symbol of what's going on in the strongest language that David Barrow and I could come up with. Basically, we've got to declare war on this catastrophe. And in declaring war on this catastrophe, we've got to end it. And we've got to decisively take action here, or it's going to ruin the Pacific and much of the North American West Coast for sure. And Japan itself is still inundated by radiation, and it's not going to be removed that quickly, and it's a very expensive proposition. So we're out for a world solution. That's what we want to do. We want to help the Japanese. And we're going to end it on a song I wrote called Light a Little Candle. It's a hope song for children. So anyway, we want to thank you for listening with us. And we're coming up next with a rebroadcast with Helen Caldicott. So listen here momentarily. It should be on the air in just a few seconds. And thank you again for listening.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield.
Well, I tell you what, Charlotte, this next lady is an international, wonderful lady. She's been working against a lot of this nuclear hazardous, you know what I mean, bombs and devices and power, you know, sources and so forth for years, for decades, over 37 years. Her name is Dr. Helen Caldicott, the single most articulate and passionate advocate of citizen action to remedy the nuclear and environmental crises. Dr. Helen Caldicott has devoted over 38 years to an international campaign to educate the public about the medical hazards of the nuclear age and the necessary changes in human behavior to stop environmental destruction. In addition, one of her umbrella groups, the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1985. I can go on and on, but welcome to our program, and we are honored to have you, Dr. Helen Caldicott.
Thank you.
Well, I tell you what, you've been up against some really frustrating times. Is that true?
Oh, yes. For 41 years trying to battle the nuclear power and weapons industry, they must be the toughest critters on earth, I think.
I noticed in some of your presentations, your tone and some of your words, words were very frustrating. And you've been at this for, 38 years plus? And when you first started, was there much more enthusiasm for this anti-nuclear, industry or what?
Well, I started work in 1971, actually, and I was a very young doctor, and I was driven to write a letter to the local newspaper because France had come down to the Pacific Ocean and was testing nuclear weapons in the atmosphere. And in Adelaide, the town where I lived, we were getting a very high fallout in the water, which was concentrating in the milk, and strontium 90 was probably getting into children's teeth and bones. And I wrote a letter saying that these children could develop leukemia and or cancer. And the letter was published. And every time the French blew up another bomb, I was on television talking about fallout and radiation and cancer, which I knew a lot about.
So you got your start in that early 71 period.
That's correct, yes. And 75% of Australians rose up
right?
against the French and demanded that the French stop blowing up bombs in the atmosphere, and we took France to the International Court of Justice, and she was forced to test underground. So it was a victory, really, by just purely by education.
What is the status right now of the movement, in your own words? How would you describe what's going on right now in this world, and especially after this Fukushima disaster, which is it has a world impact and threat to the whole world, does it not?
Oh, Fukushima is a terrible tragedy, not just for the Japanese people, but for the Northern Hemisphere. And the accident is not over, and it's very tenuous. In fact, if there's another earthquake there, a large one, Building 4 could collapse, and there would be a huge release of radiation such that Tokyo would need to be evacuated, and that's 39 million people, and the radiation would come over and land all over the United States, and people would later be developing cancer and leukemia, and it takes about 5 to 70 years for those diseases to develop once you've inhaled or eaten radioactive food. So it's a disaster waiting to happen, and I do not see the governments of the world or the United Nations doing anything about this at all. It's quite an extraordinary situation.
We have, Charlotte and I have taken an initiative to have a Fukushima Solutions Conference here in Austin, Texas, hopefully mid-July, and we would certainly love for you to be a part of that.
Well, I live in Australia. You'll have to fly me over.
Right, we'll do that. Sure, we'll fly you over first class because you're a first-class lady and a battler. You're a first-class lady and a battler and activist against what has now become, with Fukushima, man, a death wish almost for the world.
Not the whole world. You see, the two air masses of the northern and southern hemisphere don't mix at the equator, so you get the fallout. Down in Australia, it won't affect us, except that huge amounts of radioactive materials have been put into the sea in the Pacific Ocean, and the currents go north to south, and the fish swim all over the place. So we'll be impacted by that.
Right. Go ahead, Sean.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to meet you. I've watched a lot of your presentations on the Internet, on some colleges and some on YouTube. You talk about over 200 types of radioactive isotopes and all having various, shelf lives, if you were. A lot of people will say, well, you get radiation from the sun. What would you say to the critics and to the advocates for nuclear energy to claim that those 200-plus type isotopes are the same as the radiation we get from the sun?
I speak as a physician, and it's well known medically that all radiation is dangerous. It's estimated that 30% of the cancers we see are induced by background radiation from the sun and from radon that comes from rocks on the earth and the like. Radiation is cumulative. Each dose you get adds to your risk of getting cancer. No radiation is safe. You mustn't walk through those X-ray machines at the airport. You must not. Fetuses are thousands of times more sensitive to radiation than adults, children 20 times more so, and little girls are twice as sensitive as little boys. We don't know why. So to say that, well, we're just exposed to background radiation, so it's all fine, it's not fine at all. Radiation causes mutations which cause genetic diseases like cystic fibrosis, diabetes, and others that are passed on down the generations, and it causes cancer and leukemia. That's just a fact of life, and they are lying when they say things like that.
Yes, yeah, so we've laid waste, as you've said. I've been very concerned about the depleted uranium in the Middle East. What would be your comments about Iraq, Afghanistan, et cetera?
Well, the American military found that uranium-238, which is a waste product from nuclear power and weapons production, is 1.7 times more dense than lead, and so it makes terrific anti-tank shells. It penetrates the armor of a tank like a hot knife through butter. But when the uranium shell hits a tank, it burns. It's pyrophoric, and up to 80% of it burns, producing tiny little particles that can be inhaled into the lung. America used 360 tons of this ammunition in Basra, in the first Gulf invasion. They've used it in Baghdad, where half the population of 5 million is children, and they used a hell of a lot of it in Fallujah. In Fallujah, the incidence of severe congenital anomalies, like babies being born with no brains or single eyes or no arms and the like is so high, it's about 25% of births now, that the doctors have told the mothers to stop having babies. The trouble is that uranium-238 lasts for billions of years, and the incidence of childhood cancer is extremely high, and because of the sanctions, the doctors can't get the drugs to treat their childhood patients. So America's conducting, in effect, a nuclear war in Iraq. They're using this ammunition too in Afghanistan. They used it in Bosnia. They're selling it all over the world. And I went to the factory the other day in Tennessee.
Hold that thought, and we'll get back to Tennessee. We've got to take a break.
We've got to cut out. We'll be right back. Thank you.
America's number one source for independent talk radio. For
welcome back to the Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with my co-host
Charlotte Littlefield, and a warm welcome back to Dr. Helen Caldicott, who's joining us all the way from Australia. Is that correct, Dr. Caldicott?
Yes, I'm in a little fishing village south of Sydney.
Oh, wonderful. Well, you were speaking about your visit to the United States, Tennessee, some sort of manufacturing facility.
Yes, the facility is called Aerojet, and it was like standing outside, like watching a factory producing the gas ovens that Hitler made during the war to kill the Jews and the homosexuals and the others, you know, the mentally retarded. It was the most extraordinary experience, knowing that factory is producing weapons that are creating the most ghastly birth deformities and cancer in children, and will do so for the rest of time, because you see they're contaminating the cradle of civilization between the Tigris and Euphrates River in Iraq, where civilization began. That's where writing began and the law began and arithmetic and mathematics. It's just an extraordinary thing. And you know, there's been virtually no publicity about this in America, and indeed I wrote an article for the New York Times about it probably 8 or 9 years ago, and they refused to publish it. It was a straight medical article. So why would the New York Times refuse to publish something like that? What is the cover-up? Why is there a cover-up?
Well, I'm afraid that our senators are very much controlled by General Electric and some of these mega corporations, Halliburton, et cetera, not to pick on General Electric or Halliburton. But unfortunately, the United States, Congress and Senate do not respond to the people anymore. They're bought and sold and paid for by these global corporate warmongering corporations.
Yes, I know. I actually, when I spoke at an Occupy demonstration outside the EPA the other day in Washington, I called them corporate prostitutes, and they really are, except, you know, maybe Bernie Sanders from Vermont, who's a wonderful, magnificent man. But you see, the thing about America is that most people don't vote, and I don't understand that, because in Australia, voting is compulsory. We get fined $50 if we don't vote. We consider it a privilege to live in a democracy. And I tell people in America, if you don't vote, go and live in Yemen, because if you live in a democracy, you have a responsibility, and voting should be compulsory. But more than that, once you've voted, if you don't get to know your Congress representatives, congressional, and your senators, and go and see them every time they come home to their district, like once a week. They're always there. And educate them and say, if you don't do this, this, and this, and if you don't read this book or take doctors with you and teach them, then you leave a vacuum into which step the corporation. So it really is in the hands of the people. The people are the leaders, and the people in Congress are your representatives. The president is not your leader. You are his leaders, you know? And people don't understand that. So I think the Occupy movement is the first time I've seen people get off their couches and off their chairs in front of their computers and go and do something really positive. I think the movement in Wisconsin has been very powerful, you know, trying to take back their country from that dreadful Governor Walker, who's been recalled, and is being funded by the Koch brothers and others. So there's a way to, you know, to establish a democracy in America, but it will take some effort and energy, but it's very important, because the earth is in the intensive care unit and it's acutely sick. You know, it's actually dying at the moment.
Well, you know, Doctor, we've got, you know, we're talking about corruption here, but it's far deeper than I ever imagined it. We started broadcasting 5.5 years ago. Charlotte and I started out with corrupt elections and electioneering fraud. That was our first program 5.5 years ago.
Election theft.
So, you know, we can, people can be responsible and get out and vote, but that vote sometimes is turned into whoever, you know, manipulates the election into their advantage.
I mean, no, but I know that we've got to get out there and take over the Congress. You know, the Congress belongs to the people. The people pay for it. It's their building. They've got to take over the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and occupy that, like the people occupied the State House in Wisconsin for, you know, months, right through the winter. And so it actually takes commitment, responsibility, the sort of thing that I would compare to a doctor when I'm on duty at night and I've got a patient in the intensive care unit. I stay up all night with that patient. That's the dedication that we have in medicine, and we have to use that dedication now to save the planet. And it's America that has to decide whether or not the Earth lives or dies. It really is.
Well, what do you think our ramifications are for the Fukushima, Japan nuclear disasters? I know that you went and studied Chernobyl and Three Mile Island in great detail. What is your prognosis for the United States? I do mean like the Midwest, not just the western coast, but
well,
how far in is this radiation going to penetrate?
The ambient levels of radiation in Seattle after the accident went up 40,000 times above normal. And the seaweed off the coast of California and Anaheim, where Disneyland is, the levels of radioactive iodine in the kelp were extremely high, and that came from fallout that fell down with rain. And radiation fell all over your country. The EPA stopped testing the air to see if you're getting radiation. They're not testing the fish that are caught in the Pacific on the West Coast. They're not testing the water, to their discredit, I must say. And if Building 4 collapses because it's very fragile and on top is a fuel pool with spent fuel, which has 10 times more radiation in it, really, than what was released at Chernobyl. If that building collapses with an earthquake greater than 7 on a seismic scale, then you are going to get a hell of a fallout. You know, if that happens, I'm thinking of evacuating my family from Boston because I've got two little grandchildren there and they're terribly sensitive to radiation. So, and no one seems to be, it's as if everyone's like those monkeys, can't see, can't hear, can't speak, that they're practicing psychic numbing, like lemmings rushing towards the cliff. I absolutely do not understand this psychology, except that there's a huge push to protect the nuclear industry, and they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on propaganda, you know, and there's a huge cover-up.
Absolutely. In fact, right now, I signed a petition to stop the Congress or the government from guaranteeing the nuclear industry's loans for the construction of new nuclear facilities. I don't think the government should be guaranteeing any loans in the nuclear field, period.
Well,
in fact, I don't think they should be building new reactors. I think they need to be planning to shut them down.
Mining uranium, you pay for the enrichment of the uranium, you pay for the building of the reactor, you pay for the decommissioning of the reactor, you pay for the storage of radioactive waste. And when the reactor's built, the utility gets hold of it and makes $1 million a day selling you electricity for things that you don't need, like electric carving knives and clothes dryers and stuff like that. It's it's interesting because you can extrapolate that to the Pentagon, which is a socialized industry too, and you spend $1 trillion a year of your tax money on weapons and on killing.
Unbearable as an American. I cannot stand that.
Really?
We have another break upon us. We'll be right back.
Please stay tuned.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield, and a warm welcome back to the very accomplished Dr. Helen Caldicott. Doctor, you have such an extensive background of activism and education, it would be nearly impossible. It would take an hour just to tell our listening audience just how much you've done in the past 40 years or so of your career. I was wondering if you would mind talking a little bit about the Women's Action for Nuclear Disarmament, or what is now called Women's Action for New Directions.
Yes, I started that in 1980 or thereabouts, 1979, because so often when I gave a lecture, the women would come up and be terribly motivated. I'd talk about the medical effects of nuclear war. And men would come up, and the man would say, look, you're not right, it's 357 cruise missiles, not 356. And the women would scream at the man and say, that's the sort of thinking that's going to kill us all. And I thought, women are 53% of the population, and we really have the power. And I actually started a new political party called the Women's Party for Survival so that we could eradicate nuclear weapons. And then people told me I was naive to think I could start a political party in America, and I wish I actually had gone on with that. So then we called it the Women's Action for Nuclear Disarmament, and we've become very powerful, and my goal was to get 50% of the people in Congress to be women by the year 2000, which didn't happen, of course. And the representation of women is still not very high in Congress, which is very bad. But I think we've been effective in many ways, educating women and encouraging them to run for office.
You know, yeah, Doctor, I have what I call the man problem that I've looked at and written extensively. Men are the big problem. You know that.
I do know that, and I'm going to write a book called Why Men Kill and Why Women Let Them, because
in some of your speeches and everything else and all your, the thrust of your whole being, women are our life givers and nurturers, and men are very detached and egotistical, maniacal idiots at times, are they not?
Yeah, they're strange creatures, I find. I mean, they're capable of great love and tenderness and the like when they fall in love, or when their children are dying or whatever, but they are strange creatures to agree. I don't really understand them on the whole. I think there's been a lot of work done lately on hormone receptors in the brain and how that influences human behavior. For instance, testosterone makes people very aggressive, and if you give testosterone to women, for instance, if they have breast cancer or whatever, they become aggressive too, and their sex drive goes up, which is interesting. And there's another hormone that women secrete at a time of stress called oxytocin, which is a very nurturing hormone, and that's secreted particularly after women give birth. And I remember when I had my three babies, I felt I could feed the whole world. I felt so nurturing. And so there's a very big physiological and behavioral difference between men and women. And I want to explore that because I find that fascinating. I know that this is a contentious subject. My audiences get quite disturbed when I talk about it, but it's very important to analyze and diagnose why we keep fighting and killing. And if we keep fighting and killing each other the way we always have, we're going to blow up the planet now that we've got nuclear weapons. There's absolutely no doubt about that.
Well, what I say, Doctor, sometimes is that we have false selves as generals, American generals, fighting other false selves in the guise of being Taliban fighters. See what I mean?
Yeah, that's
right. And these false selves are ego-based and nurtured, and the abstracted self then, well, within men, they can attain a higher level or a deeper delusional level of an abstraction of that false self. See what I mean?
Yes, I do. I think it was put best by one general who said, quotes unquote, if you take away our nuclear weapons, man, that's taking away the family jewels.
Yes, yes. Well,
so
young
that's
men.
Why I called one of my books in 1984 Missile Engine. destroyed, you know, because these weapons, I think, you know, they must have erectile dysfunction or something like that.
Right. Well, I believe in a delusional state, men suffer a deeper delusional mode of existence than women do.
Oh, absolutely. I think.
And in that state, they're nurturing a false self through a lot more abstracted, conjured up, invented, and imagined ways to nurture that false self. And then that false self is tied to all these other false selves. And then that's the downfall of men in the world.
Well, you're probably right. And the fact is that we cohabit the planet with 30 million other species, all of whom are absolutely as important as are we. And we don't give credence to them at all. Our lives depend upon them, but our lives are less important than theirs. You know, koalas and kangaroos and wallabies and wombats and all the wonderful things we have in Australia, that will go too if we have a nuclear war. It just sickens
right.
me. It makes my heart weep.
Right.
They can
what
go
would you
with
say,
nuclear
Charlotte?
Accident as they can go with a nuclear accident as well. I feel extremely vulnerable for the number of submarines that are out in the oceans, for the number of nuclear power plants providing, you know, electricity for communities. I feel very vulnerable even outside of whether somebody will drop a bomb or not.
Yes, you're right. America's got 104 nuclear power plants. They produce 20% of the electricity you use, and Americans waste 28% of the electricity they use, so therefore nuclear power is absolutely unnecessary, as it is in Japan, because now all their 54 reactors are closed down and they're doing all right. You know, they may be sweating a bit more in the summer because they can't run their air conditioners. Well, that's too bad. But you've got, I think, 21 reactors of the same design as Fukushima. Many of them are very vulnerable. Four are built on earthquake faults in California. I think that the Indian Point reactor is 35 miles from Manhattan near an earthquake fault. North Anna reactor near Washington, D.C. There was an earthquake near that recently and shook the reactor. So you are in great jeopardy.
Let's not kid ourselves. The nuclear engineers... The nuclear field is primarily full of men. End
yes.
of discussion.
Well, I have to say that I do a lot of tweeting these days, and I tell you, some men are being so incredibly rude to me. So rude. And they work for the nuclear industry. They said they did. And it's more than rude. They're disgusting.
Well, what I experienced, Dr. Caldicott, in the military, United States Navy, I was an electrician. I graduated in the top 10% of my class. Those top 10% who graduated with me got to go on to the Navy's nuclear program so they could operate the nuclear submarines. And that type of mentality that I saw was that, like a Top Gun fighter pilot almost. It was a very exclusive boys club, old boys network. You know, supposedly they were all high IQ'd, et cetera. I've been personally offended by their arrogance, their lack of common sense from day one.
Really? Were you on a nuclear submarine too?
No, I fixed them. I did not get to go out. There are women, I think, now serving on board submarines as of the last decade. But no, I got out before women were put onto the submarines. In fact, I'm under the impression, well, they certainly are on the New York, the aircraft carriers, the nuclear aircraft carriers. And
well,
I could be mistaken.
It's totally inappropriate for women to be in the military. It was Gloria Steinem who introduced women into the military, saying, you know, we need equal rights, but women aren't killers. I think it's kind of, and you know, I think over 50% of them are either raped in the military or sexually abused because the way they train them.
Yeah, it was not a fun ride, I'll tell you that much.
Okay, we've got to take a break here. We'll be right back. Thank you for being with us. Back to the Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield, and a warm welcome back to Dr. Helen Caldicott. Doctor, I'd like to let the listening audience know that you have written numerous publications, and you are also the author of 7 books. For brevity, I'm not going to name all of your books, except to let the listening audience know that your most recent book was a revised update of your book, If You Love This Planet. It came out in March 2009. So folks, go to Amazon.com or Dr. Caldicott, where are your books available at?
Yes, if you go to my website, HelenCaldicott.com, you can order them from Amazon. That's the best thing, I think.
Okay, great. You've also been the subject of several films, 8 Minutes to Midnight, among, I'm not going to list them all, but ladies and gentlemen, if you go to our website and to Dr. Helen Caldicott's website, you can see that. And let's, George and I always like to end on a positive note. We're in our last segment, and I was wondering if you would like to talk about your, the Helen Caldicott Foundation, nuclearfreeplanet.org,
yes.
And beyond nuclear.
NuclearFreePlanet.org. Yeah, I started the Helen Caldicott Foundation a couple of years ago, and we've got a web page, NuclearFreePlanet.org, and I've got a Facebook, and I'm doing a lot of social media now, tweeting and Facebooking, because I want to get to the younger generation, and they don't tend to read newspapers anymore, and they don't tend to watch the evening news or television. They're tweeting and they're on their Facebook. So I did that, and it's becoming pretty successful. We're getting lots and lots and lots of visits all the time, particularly after Fukushima, because every time I opened my computer, I would get 500 new downloads. What am I going to do? Where will I live? What do I feed my baby? How do I protect my children? People are desperate to know, and I think that's still so. I also have a radio program called If You Love This Planet, so, and it plays on the Pacifica Network, community stations around America, Canada, and Australia, and I interviewed the top people, leading scientists on nuclear power, on radiation, on cancer, on cell phones and brain cancers, on global warming, sea level rises, permafrost melting, on nuclear war and the threat of nuclear war, which is really ever-present every day, with weapons on hair trigger alert, as you know, having worked in the Navy and knowing about those nuclear weapons. So if you go to ifyoulovethisplanet.org, you can listen to those programs, which are very popular, I have to say, particularly the ones about Fukushima.
Yeah, Dr. Caldicott, we have your full bio. I put it in our webpage program guide there. TheSecretSuite.com, and they can click off on your radio program, your publications, your foundations, and everything else. In your closing comments here, if we skipped over or left something out, in your summarize and give us some of your closing comments that could be good advice to our listening audience.
Well, the 3 problems facing the planet, the major ones, as I see it as a physician practicing global preventive medicine, are 1, global warming, and we can fix global warming. And in fact, I produced a report or commissioned a report called Carbon Free, Nuclear Free. By 2030, America could be carbon free and no nuclear power using renewable energy. There should be a solar panel on every house in America, solar hot water systems, solar generated cars, you know, solar panels on the parking lots. There's enough wind west of the Mississippi to supply the country with 3 times the electricity you currently use. The answer to global warming is there. Look it up. It's on my webpage, Carbon Free, Nuclear Free, the prescription for survival. 1. 2, we must close down all the nuclear power plants in America tomorrow. And, you know, you are responsible for doing that. I think you should occupy the NRC. Whatever it takes, do it. 3, we can abolish nuclear weapons. Russia wants to. Of the 23,000 hydrogen bombs in the world today, Russia and America own 97%. They're the real rogue states holding the world at nuclear ransom every second of every day when there could be an accidental nuclear war. So, therefore, if Russia wants to abolish the weapons and the Pentagon's holding it up, you have to get off your bottom, so to speak, and get out there and make sure that the American politicians are responsible to save the planet. And we can't abolish nuclear weapons. If Russia and America abolish theirs together, then we can say to France, okay, you get rid of yours. To England, you get rid of yours. To Israel, which has the third largest nuclear arsenal in the world, you get rid of yours too, India and Pakistan. So what I'm optimistic about is there are solutions to the three major problems facing the planet: global warming, nuclear power, and nuclear war. Educate yourself. I would quote President Jefferson, an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion. Inform yourself. Read the books I wrote. I don't need to make money. I didn't write them for money. I wrote them for education. Read them like I read Grey's Anatomy to become a physician, and know that because the Earth is in the intensive care unit, acutely, critically ill, we are all now physicians to a dying planet, and we can save it.
Well, I tell you what, it's getting very, very dangerous, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is. And we must be informed, and we must stop practicing psychic numbing and face reality, go through the grief process, and then decide to do something about it. I mean, if you love your children, if you love your grandchildren, if you love smelling a rose when the roses start blooming, you'll know what I'm talking about.
As far as protecting ourselves from Fukushima, can things like changing our diet to protect the thyroid?
No, there's nothing you can do. Except that if you know that there's going to be a meltdown in a reactor near you, you can take potassium iodide tablets before you breathe in the radioactive iodine in the radioactive cloud that blocks the uptake of radioactive iodine in your thyroid gland. But there are 200 other isotopes, as you mentioned, which go to all sorts of organs in your body, and that won't stop cancers developing in various parts of your body. No, the answer is there's nothing you can do. That's a tragedy. That's the diabolical drama of nuclear power. There's nothing we as physicians can do to protect you or save you once a nuclear accident has occurred and you've been irradiated or you eat radioactive food. Do not eat any food from Japan. Hillary Clinton signed a deal with Japan saying that America would still import food from Japan as normal.
So you believe that there's a cover-up on the dangers that are occurring right now in Fukushima?
I don't believe there's a cover-up. There is a major cover-up in your media, a major, wicked, immoral cover-up, something that we've never seen in the history of medicine before, because this is a medical problem. It's a medical problem.
So that's what we started out reporting this within days, the night of the accident over there. We were getting reports that within 24, 48 hours, their meltdown, their isotopes and particles being released that would indicate meltdown underway. We were on top of this, but the press and the Air Force, we interviewed Air Force personnel. They were all in to put a cap on it and keep it down, keep it quiet, moderate their view. That's what we saw.
It's really wicked. I can't think of any other word but wicked. Just wicked.
Right. It's wicked, that's for sure.
Well, on a positive note, the civilians of the United States have started a sort of semi-professional, we can't even call it professional, but these are amateur radiological workers who are trying to test. It's a voluntary system. It's nationwide where they're measuring background radiation. Because we know the government's not doing
gamma,
it.
With Geiger counters, but you're only measuring gamma radiation, which doesn't tell you what the isotopes are. Some isotopes from reactors give off gamma radiation, and some do not. Some,
right.
Like tritium, only produce beta radiation, which is not measured with a Geiger counter. Some, like plutonium and others, only give out alpha radiation, which is not measured by a Geiger counter.
Absolutely.
So
the learning curve is steep, and anyways, we can conquer this, like you were saying. We have tough challenges, but we can do this.
Dr. Helen Caldicott, we certainly admire all your hard work. we're getting ready to exit here in about 30 seconds, but thank you for taking the time to being on our program, and we certainly do honor you tonight and all your past work and your brilliant type of approaches here.
Thank you very much. It's my great pleasure to have been with you, and I admire you too for what you do. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Good night.
Bye-bye.